Mastering technical sales is the pursuit we all strive to accomplish in our careers as sales engineers. Luckily for those of us in the industry, there are people like our special guest today who have literally written the missing manual on how to master the skills needed to lay the foundation for a successful career. So join us today, episode of Sales Burrito, with our special guest, John Kerr. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time! Welcome to Sales Burrito! The premier podcast for today's sales engineers working in technology sales, created by SEs for SEs. With your host, Enrique Barreto and Dave Siles.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the next episode of Sales Burrito. This is Dave Siles, your co-host, with me as always, looking very dapper in his tuxedo today.
I know.
How are you doing, Enrique?
I am doing fantastic. And today I have the privilege and the honor, I know that I've said this in previous episodes, to introduce a special guest, which helped me in my career when I was a youngling sales engineer, Mr. John Kerr. John Kerr, how are you, sir?
I am doing fabulous. I'm sitting here in Longboat Key, Florida. It's 85 degrees, sunny, blue skies. What could be better? And I get to work with you two wonderful gentlemen.
We appreciate it. We appreciate it for sure. I know that you have, obviously, you know, you've known Dave in his past history and whatnot. As I met you in person for the first time, I talked to you about the influence that you did with, you know, your Mastering Technical Sales book. And we're talking about the one in when I was in 2009, 2010 back at EMC. So we couldn't be happier to actually have you to tell us a little bit more about how things have changed, or if things have not changed, if things continue to be the same. So Dave, you know, I know that, we always like to thank our subscribers. You know, I know that our episode last week, which it was, I believe it was the episode on talking for my startups and whatnot, created a huge buzz in the industry. So again, you know, to you, the listeners, or those that are watching us on YouTube, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to actually teach you some of the things that we've learned as sales engineers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm really excited to have John on. You know, John and I do go way back. I think John and I first worked together back in like 2007, 2008. I had to go back and look through my history. And, you know, John, you've got a very interesting career yourself. I mean, you're not only, you know, what people, as my friend would say, the godfather, I think, of writing the missing manual for mastering technical sales, but you yourself, you've walked a mile in the shoes of an SE. Can you maybe give people just a little bit of background on how you went through your career to where you're at now with MTS?
Sure. We could take a whole 30 minutes just doing that, I think. So listen, first of all, I just want to say I'm thrilled to be working with you two. And I think you certainly win the prize for the most over-the-top intro music of any of the podcasts out there. So it's great. Thank you. So I actually started years and years and way too many years ago as a chemical engineer. And so I spent the first 4 or 5 years of my career crawling around the oil pipes in a refinery back in the UK. And we had a vendor come in trying to sell us some software. And I looked at it and said, wow, this could make my life and the life of my fellow chemical engineers a lot easier. So I became their internal champion and was effectively selling their software internally within the refinery. And it got to the point where the sales rep and the sales engineer said, hey, you're pretty good at this. Would you like a job? And I said, yeah, why not? But on one condition, I was selling back then, you know, only if I get to move over to the States, because at that point, you know, I'd met my Yankee sweetheart, Allison. We'd been married for a couple of years. And we wanted to move over here to the US. So I said, if you give me a job, I'll move back. And so we relocated to Princeton, New Jersey, which is where the company was headquartered. And I got my very first job as a sales engineer. And I'll date myself. That was 1984. like back in the days of 35 millimeter slide carousels and overhead transparencies. Since then, I have been everything from an individual contributor, you know, up at 4 o'clock in the morning, my hotel room, trying to get my demo to work, right? Well, at the repos room next to me, fast asleep, all the way to being a VP of a 200 person, you know, technical sales organization. Also stepped outside that environment a couple of times, most noticeably as a kind of CIO at a mid-sized manufacturing company. And then eventually, gosh, like 12, 15 years ago, started up mastering technical sales. And I've been doing that ever since, which is probably the best job I've ever had.
Yeah, that's a great story. I love the fact that you connect all sides of it. Now, you know, not just the SE side of it, but, you know, having lived in the customer's shoes. You know, I've done that in my career as well. And we had a couple episodes a few back where we kind of had that kind of journey of the career, you know, and how an IT manager sometimes makes the best SE. You kind of went the other way around with it, but it's still all cross-related. Yeah, we, you know, obviously the world has changed, you know, quite a bit. COVID's impacted a lot of different areas of business. It's changed the SE's job, but how has it really impacted your business in delivering training? I got to imagine that you've had to adapt just as much as, you know, some of our customers and even the companies, you know, SE's work for.
Oh, sure. Well, so like everyone else, there's like massive changes that have gone underway. Interestingly enough, about this time last year, I was sitting down trying to figure out what I wanted to do with the company and what our strategic plans were. And I decided it was about time to fully virtualize our curriculum. So we've been delivering predominantly physical classes, although we had, you know, maybe 20% of it was virtual, but I decided it was time to really go all in and truly virtualize the curriculum, which is pure serendipity, right? Because who knew, you know, COVID was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So by the time March rolled around, we were actually in a position where a good chunk of our core curriculum was actually ready to be delivered virtually. And it wasn't the old slides, it was brand new material. And so March the 11th, like, the world stopped. And nothing happened from March the 11th until like April, I don't know, 25th or 27th. And every customer we had hit the pause button, and then it just lit up. And this year is going to be the most phenomenal year in the history of mastering technical sales in terms of number of classes delivered, new customers acquired, number of facilitators that we have. It's just amazing. We had 1 week in June where we delivered 21 classes in five different languages around the world. I mean, how crazy and humbling is that?
That's amazing.
Yeah, I think so too. Who knew?
So are you speaking all these languages now, John, or have you mastered Rosetta Stone better than...
Well, I can speak both English and American, so that's two languages right there. And German is possible, but things like Korean and Japanese and Mandarin and Spanish, I just leave to the other guys and gals.
That's great. I'm glad to hear your business is thriving and you've gone global with it. You know, what have you seen from your customers coming in looking for training? What the impact has been on the SCs in their role changing? I mean, what do you see the world today, you know, having to adapt to this new modality of selling virtually? Do you think that's going to stay? Do you think it's going to change? Is it going to be part of the new norm going forward from your view of the world?
Oh, it'll certainly be part of the new normal. I hate that phrase. it'll certainly be part of, you know, 2021 and 2022. To what degree, I don't know. I wonder, thinking about, you know, that inherently all my customers are sales organizations, just like yours is. And I think once, you know, whatever, there's a true vaccine out there and, you know, COVID-19 does eventually, we hope, fade away, I can see all these sales organizations just lighting up and saying, you know, we're going to have a sales kickoff in Hawaii and Bali and, you know, mm-hmm. Singapore, and it'll just go crazy again. So, you know, we'll get a lot of physical things. In terms of interactions with the clients, though, you know, a good chunk of it was already virtual. I mean, many of my enterprise customers were telling me that probably, I mean, here in the US, maybe 50% of their interactions with customers were virtual as opposed to physical. That number is a little lower in Europe and drastically lower in APAC. You know, now it's almost 100% across the board. So is it going to snap back? I think it'll gradually come back, but I don't think we'll ever get back to the, you know, the heady old days of 2018 or 2019 again.
I agree with you.
Got it. So, John, talk to us a little bit more about the creation of the Mastering Technical Sales. I understand it's now on the third edition, right? And what was the, you know, walk us through that, you know, from the beginning since 2001. How, you know, how do you got the energy to formalize and create such a masterful piece that has helped many, many, many around the world, right?
So the genesis story of MTS, to use the acronym, is kind of interesting. So we'll go back almost 20 years, and I was an SE director sitting in my, I know, fifth set of training about sales process, so whatever, solution selling. And it's a week-long training. Right? The two of you are probably, you're nodding heads, right? So you've been through that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Friday. And my brain is numb, my rear end is numb, and I look over to this lady, you know, Sandy, sitting next to me, one of the managers, and I said, Sandy, why are we here? It's 5 days of training, only a day and a half of it is relevant to me, you, and our team, and we can absorb it three times faster than, you know, all these salespeople in here. And she just looks at me and says, if you're so smart, why don't you write a book about it? And wow, what a great idea. One of my other colleagues, Aaron Bowling, who is my co-author on a couple of the editions, was there as well. So we retired to a local bar and figured out, because all sales engineers do that, right? A coffee house or a bar. So we retired to a local bar and spec'd it out. And from that, the first edition of MTS was born out of pure frustration, because I couldn't find anyone who could train my people in things that we needed to know about. And so that's how the book came out, and that's ultimately how the company got started. It was just like absolute total frustration.
Well, and it is amazing, right? Because as I've worked in multiple organizations since I first read the book, you see different, you know, whether it's their intranet pages or something, you see different flares of the John Kerr effect, right? You know, you see different, you don't see it completely, but you just see people that were enabled and trained on that book, basically going and moving up in their careers as successful sales engineers. Maybe they're, you know, SC engineering directors, et cetera, kind of employing some of that kind of stuff. So it's a very powerful book. Now, from a changing role to an SC, right? Let's say from a demo monkey, you know, that equals, you know, a sales partner. Can you describe how that's changed from 2001 till now? You know, has the SE role changed from, you know, so back in the days, I felt almost like a subordinate of the sales rep, right? You know, when in reality, you know, I carry quota, I should be in the same level. Have you seen changes in that at all?
Yes, is the short answer. The longer answer is like massive changes. I can give you some stats behind it.
Okay.
So we ran a survey not too long ago in conjunction with one of our clients and a consulting company. And we went out there and we asked, wow, like 2,200 mid to senior level executives in Fortune 1000 companies, what are the skills that you value most in a pre-sales engineer? Right. And so for a few of them, we had to explain what a pre-sales engineer actually was. Right? So, you know, it's the person you look at in the room when the salesperson finishes talking to see if they nod their head, right? That's the sales engineer. So we explained that to them and said, what are the top skills? So the number one skill they wanted was someone who understands my business. Number two skill was someone who can clearly and effectively communicate with me. Number three skill was someone who can design innovative solutions with my staff. Number four was someone I can trust to do the right thing for me and my company. And coming in at number five was someone who has deep technical knowledge or can go out and get that technical knowledge. And if you drill down on those stats, the first four, the consultative things, like 80, 85% of people said that. Number five, deep technical knowledge, was like 42, 43%. So what that kind of means is that now deep technical knowledge is viewed of as table stakes, to use poker terminology. And that's an expectation of you as an SE. Either you have it or you can go find someone who has it. And now there's all this other consultative stuff layered on top of it. Go back two decades to the dot-com boom, 1999-2000, deep technical skills was number one, right? And that's what made you an SE. You know, and you're right, you were the demo monkey, or you were thrown into a data center and you had to do a POC. So the role has changed dramatically in the last 20 years. even more so in the last five, as all these other consultative, almost salesy type skills have been put on top. But interestingly enough, the role of the sales rep, and the FSR, AE, whatever you want to call them, has barely changed at all, other than maybe utilizing technology a little better in their day-to-day job. So, you know, massive, massive changes. And it's not, that's not going to change. The role of the SE is going to radically change over the next 5 years as well. So I think it's a great time to have the job.
Yeah, I agree. I think that one of the parts that I loved about your book was when the concept of the business value discovery and the behavioral crimes, mm-hmm. you know, of that, where, you know, often I felt that if I personally felt when I first started that it was, I was a do this, do that, do this. And if I didn't stand up to understand those behavioral crimes, I didn't have a voice to actually say, hey, we should maybe be concentrating on something else, not on some other stuff, right?
It is. And I think the concept of sales engineers doing demos has a lot to answer for. Mm-hmm. If that's all you view the job as a sales engineer doing, you know, I think that says much about the profession. Certainly it's part of what we do. But if you focus everything around the demo and that's what you train for, I think that's the wrong focus. And it can lead to bad deals, missed deals, unqualified deals, and all those other really bad behaviors. And it can be demoralizing as well.
Yeah, that's a great point, John. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, one of the things we hear sometimes from, you know, people, I think getting new into their career, is they don't like the moniker of sales being part of, you know, the SE, right? Why sales is the SE moniker and it's not a systems engineer? You know, I think we have to try to educate and train more and more in that mindset of why engineers need to be sales focused first, and, you know, bring the systems part as, again, as you said, that core responsibility that has to be in their toolkit. But have you run into that with your training, you know, where people are pushing back on, you know, I'm not a sales engineer, I'm a systems engineer, and, you know, that sales are for the AE.
Or a technical consultant, or there's so many monikers of it.
Right. Well, I think we're up to 48 different names for what we do.
48?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, right now, you got solution architects, customer engineers is a new one, you know, cloud systems engineers. You know, all the new titles have a C on front for cloud now. So, but in terms of pushback, the pushback normally comes from two populations. One is the really young SE who's, you know, pretty much a new college graduate who's in love with the technology, rightly so, in love with the technology of their company, and doesn't understand why building a better mousetrap, you know, just isn't the way to go. And then you've also got the people, you know, frankly, towards the tail end of their career, the grizzled veterans who've been doing the job for 20, 30 years and are unwilling to embrace the changes that have happened, I think, to the profession over the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, but fundamentally, if when I talk to VPs of sales or VPs of pre-sales engineers, I always hear, you know, I have great technically competent people. Right? They know the product inside and out, but, right? And it's the piece after the but that my company helps fix, which is, mm-hmm. but at the slightest resistance, they just go down the technical rat hole and it's all speeds and feeds and bits and bytes, and there's no relationship back to the business value whatsoever. And I think that's where the rockstar sales engineer makes the difference, is you relate everything back to, you know, how can you help your customer make more money, save money, or drive risk out of their organization? And that's the missing link.
That's a great point. And I always remember that from trainings what I've done with you and had you and with my teams. You know, when looking with your lens of the world, you know, let's help educate this new generation that's coming into the sales engineering side of it. You know, title aside, you know, what are the characteristics that you see today that, you know, if they have well rounded out, make them that rock star SE? Besides the technical skills, right?
I mean, besides the technical skills. I would, as a hiring manager, I would always look for, you know, attitude and agility, or adaptability, so the ability to change. And I think now in this virtual world in particular, you know, you need to be a little bit of a, you know, impromptu artist and be able to, you know, change and flip-flop around between things. So that's one definite skill. Then I think just being a rock star explainer of both technical things and business things. You know, and I always used to, you know, joke about those Steve Jobs presentations with the black screen and two words on it. Mm-hmm. People say, you want simplicity in PowerPoint. Well, yeah, you do. But if you're a sales engineer, sometimes you've got to present technical stuff to technical people, and they need to see a bunch of stuff on the screen. So, you know, not everything's as simple as that. So you need to be able to, you know, talk techie to the techies, and you need to be able to relate that back, you know, in terms of business to the executives or to the line of business people. And the really great sales engineer does that. And the third thing, because as you know, John always does things in threes, is the really good sales engineer finds pain and links their solution portfolio back to the pain. The rockstar sales engineer, though, finds the gain as well. And that's the puppy dogs, the unicorns, the sunsets, the walks on the beach, the amazing things that your customer will be able to do in a year once they have your stuff up and running. And it kind of gets their head out of the immediate pain and stop it bleeding. And they start thinking about the future and all the good things. And if you can do that as a sales engineer, you've got that emotional positive attachment between the future and your product. And that can make the difference in winning the deal or not.
I've always remembered you saying that, the gain through the pain, gain through the pain. Bring them through the glass, let them bleed a little bit, then heal them. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a pretty brutal approach, but yes, I'm sure I said that at some point.
it made the point for sure. Well, yeah. One of the things that I personally learned, I mean, from you was, aside from everything that I've learned, was the, sailing whiteboard and leading with a story and showing the story, having the colors, changing different things, right? To me back then, I mean, it's something that's been around for some time, but to me, it was like mind boggling that the colors will have different meanings and whatnot. Now, with the pandemic that the world has seen, right? Are you still seeing these type of, anecdotal whiteboards that we used to do in conference rooms? Are you still seeing them beneficial, or are there any creative things that you're seeing that other, this generation of sales engineers is doing that maybe we didn't do 10, 15 years ago?
Well, obviously, there's a lot more collaboration. There's the tools out there. So so now a lot of SEs are using whiteboards. And the art of visual selling is still one of our top three selling classes, even now through the pandemic. And it has been for 10, 12 years. It's basically because it is not slides. Now, the ability to now use an electronic whiteboard and deliver electronically over whatever, Zoom, Google Meet or something, and visually explain something to the client, you're still looking for that magic moment when the client says, oh, I see what you mean. Right? And as soon as you hear them say that, you got them.
The hook, yes.
And it's the equivalent of in the old days, where they grab the marker pen from your hand and say, no, not that way. I want it done this way. And they'd get something out on a physical whiteboard and suddenly it's a joint solution. Well, now that's done electronically and you can collaborate. You can have multiple people involved. You can throw up a slide as a background and write on top of the slide. So it's still really big. And if you think about it, how many slides does the average client see over the course of a month? And the answer is too many. How many of those slides do they remember? Maybe three. So what's the chances that one of your vendor slides is in that three? It's not really super high. But if you can light up the visual side of the brain and sketch something out, get your client to collaborate with you, magic happens. And we have all kinds of data that just shows there's a tremendous ROI for visual selling in all stages of the sales cycle, from early discovery through to solution design to actually closing the deal.
Yeah, one of the things that that I learned in the streets, right, after reading your book and whatnot, was as I went out to different prospects to not even do a demo, just basically label their challenges, problems, and needs and whatnot. You did a good job with visualizations on a whiteboard when the client is telling you, wait, don't erase it, leave it there. Or wait, let me take a picture and now you can erase it. It's a sense of accomplishment that you know that the audience did follow the process and you were able to captivate them and do the hook.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. And it really builds up the credibility of a sales engineer as well, because it's something that you create, right? It comes from your brain to your hand, you know, whether it's a marker pen or a mouse or a stylus, and then you draw it for the customer. So it's personalized, and it's not something that some product marketing irk back in Sunnyvale or whatever has created for you. It's yours, and you build it for the client. And that kind of, you know, old style shoulder to shoulder selling does major, major things to, you know, advance the relationship and really build that trusted relationship between you and, you know, your customer.
John, you know, last episode we did, we recorded last week, honestly, was around, you know, being that first SE through the door at a startup. And obviously, you know, when I first read your book, you know, there was the whole concept of sales engineers, minimal role and like lead qualifications. And obviously in a startup, you got to wear many hats. And, you know, how does mastering technical sales really adapt to those small organizations, agile organizations, where you have to wear, you know, every hat under the sun and take on more of that sales role perspective? You see that it translates down as much as it does scaling up into the larger organization?
Yeah, it does, David. I like to say that sales engineers are really the oil that makes the engine of sales run. And in a smaller company, a startup, they're really the oil that makes the entire company run. Because if anybody can get something done, it's normally the SE, because we're the organization of last resort. And if you're in a small startup, you are the person of last resort. Mm-hmm. So if something needs to be done to make the customer happy, to get something to work, to have engineering fix a bug, then you're it. And you are normally the person who's going to get it done. And I think that's actually way more fun than if you're an SE at a honking great big company and there's, you know, 6,500 other SEs who are doing not exactly the same thing as you, but the same basic role. How much difference can you make there? Whereas in a smaller organization, you have the capacity to, you know, touch everything, and you're the voice of the customer as well. You know, right. So there's a lot to be said for being in that smaller organization and growing it, watching it grow.
I would agree with you.
It's awesome. Yeah.
We got a lot of feedback from the last episode. You know, people are like, well, after we listened to you, it's like, sounds like the greatest job in the world, but why would you know you want to do a startup if they're going to fail 75% of the time, you know? So it was very interesting, but thanks for...
There's the old thing, right? Why would you want to be a baseball player if you fail 70% of the time?
That's right.
It's the 30% where you succeed that counts.
Yeah. No one remembers that last strikeout when you hit the grand slam. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and insert sports analogy here, yes, for the global audience.
Yeah. That's right.
Now, John, one of the things that, you know, and I know we're kind of getting close on our time, but one of the things that when I read your book, you had advices on why reading the book for new SEs as well as for experienced SEs. And something that struck me interesting to me is that for experienced SEs, the book would help them with reducing stress. I mean, back in the day, I didn't know. I mean, but I can tell you that it was stressful, because I can tell you that even something as simple as dealing with assumptions or me thinking about it, I don't have all the data, you know, that created a lot of anxiety and stress for me. So is that what you meant with that, or what, you know, what was the premise of that when you said reducing stress for experienced SEs?
Often it's understanding why you do something. So if you've been an SE for 15, 20, 25 years, then you're obviously pretty successful, otherwise you wouldn't still be doing it. But you kind of get baked in your ways and the old habits. And sometimes if you take a step back and ask why you do something and drill down on it, why am I getting audience interaction at this point? Why do I get more questions when I present this slide deck than when one of my peers presents this slide deck? So if you look at it, you actually understand why you do things. I think it can really help you with actually learning new behaviors. You know, my wife, who's the, you know, educator, psychologist, tells me it takes about 6 to 8 weeks for a new behavior, if you work at it, to become a habit. And then it becomes part of you as a better SE, even if you've got 25 years behind you, and, you know, now you're incrementally better and you move on to something else. So I think it does de-stress the role, because you understand why. And you know what? There's something a little reassuring about having a book and just dropping it on your desk with a thud, you know, particularly you've got a somewhat awkward salesperson that you're working with. you know, sometimes you can say, why are you doing that, David? So, well, it's in the book. And you wave the book.
Read the manual.
Yeah. It's like, so, well, why do you need to do this discovery? Well, it's in the sales process, right? It's not me who needs to do it. It's the sales process that says I have to do it. So sometimes having that credible third party, it can actually help in multiple ways. So I think that's kind of where I was going.
I agree. No, that's good.
That's a great point, John. So, you know, I really appreciate you joining us today. I wouldn't be remiss if I didn't ask, what's in the future for the book? Is there a fourth edition on the way?
Yes. So I'm going to give you a world exclusive scoop. In that last week, I signed the contract. There you go.
There it is. World exclusive.
World exclusive. So last week I signed a contract to start working on the fourth edition of Mastery in Technical Sales.
Amazing. So that's awesome. Probably.
Thank you.
Yeah. Congratulations.
So the intent is for that to come out probably towards the end or at the end of next year. It's going to be totally rewritten almost every single word. So.
Well, I can't wait to read it, and I'm sure the audience does as well. You know, we really appreciate you joining us, and we obviously we're going to give away a couple copies of your book to our listeners. So if you have feedback on this episode, ask us a question on Twitter or on our YouTube channel. We'll draw a couple of winners from there for a couple copies of the book from John. But John, you know, on behalf of Rike and I, you know, we wouldn't be in our careers where we're at without you. And I'm really glad that you're able to join us. And we would love to have you back when the fourth edition drops, because I think there'd probably be a lot of nuggets and we should uncover. And I think it'd probably build another great episode.
Certainly happy to come back. And I have to say, you know, thank you to the two of you for doing this. Now, you're giving back to the pre-sales community as well. And this is something else that's changed over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, there was nothing. So the last 2 years, we've got podcasts, we've got, you know, pre-sales collectives, we've got organizations, National Society of Sales Engineers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the profession is exploding, and that's only good for everybody. But thanks for you too, and congrats on the 5-star rating on the podcast.
Yeah, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And guys, until next time, as I always say, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing. Have a great day, everyone.
We hope you've enjoyed the Sales Burrito Show. Be sure to subscribe to catch future episodes wherever you catch your favorite podcast. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sales Burrito. Until next time, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.